I have signed two bills for Mr. Nathaniel Sowerby. Have let him raise altogether £900 on my name. And concerning this matter, I have told my dear wife nothing. There was always the hope, of course, that I would not have to find the money myself, that things would come good for Sowerby, and he would settle the bills, and my wife would remain happy in her ignorance. But things have not come good for him, far from it. And as Sowerby's career declines, I fear that the Vicar of Framley, who had such aspirations, will be dragged down with him.
Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised for radio in 3 episodes by Martin Wade. Starring David Haig as Mark Robarts, Anna Massey as Lady Lufton, Olivia Williams as Fanny, Abigail Doherty as Lucy, and Kenneth Cranham as Josiah Crawley. With John Wood, Selina Cadell, Amanda Root, Rosemary Leach, John Carlyle, Gabrielle Lloyd, and David Horovitch. Episode 3.
I am so glad you could come, Dr. Thorne.
The way my niece presented it, if I did not come, I would be regarded forevermore as an ungrateful savage. So this is a conversazione.
This is my conversazione, Doctor. Mrs. Proudie held one a few months ago, which was a very pure affair. No chairs. Very little eating or drinking. She doesn't care for such things, apparently. Doesn't care for plates either. You know, it's very hard keeping up conversation. I mean, conversazione. While juggling with a cup of tea and a slice of crumbly cake.
My dear Miss Dunstable.
Mrs. Smith.
I wondered before I got here whether Mrs. Proudie would be accusing you of plagiarism. But I see you have avoided any danger of that.
Well, it would be very stupid, I think, if all conversaziones were alike. Mine is the naughty sort. Mrs. Smith, this is Dr. Thorne.
Pleased to meet you.
Dr. Thorne is the uncle of Mary Thorne, Mary Gresham, as she now is, who married young Frank Gresham of Greshamsbury.
Indeed.
The two of us became very good friends at their wedding. Did we not, Dr. Thorne?
Yes. Yes, we did.
And I am hoping that we are good friends still.
This is not a conversazione. It is not. How can Miss Dunstable possibly say that it is?
Why, I don't know, my dear. It is certainly not at all like your conversazione.
When I undertook the trouble of introducing conversaziones into society, I had no idea that the notion would be so dreadfully misinterpreted. Conversaziones, Bishop, will come to mean nothing if we allow Miss Dunstable to get away with this.
I think you're right, my dear.
And dancing, for instance, is all very well in its proper place.
Certainly.
But when Miss Dunstable invites her guests to assemble for a higher purpose, and then arranges an evening of frivolity and self-indulgence, and she is no better than a hypocrite.
A hypocrite, yes.
A spade should be called a spade.
A spade, decidedly.
She has a fine enough household. Fine large reception rooms. These are the sort of rooms, I think, that should be provided by the nation for the use of its bishops. Don't you think?
Ludovic, how nice to see you. Have you been here long?
Arrived just this instant, Mother. Good evening, Miss Grantley.
Good evening, Lord Lufton.
Well now, Ludovic, this is not a Mrs. Proudie conversazione, you know. So are you going to ask Griselda to dance?
But I'm not sure Mrs. Proudie isn't on the right lines. Perhaps the whole evening should be devoted to elevated discussion. What's your view, Miss Grantley?
I haven't given the question any thought, Lord Lufton.
Nor should you, my dear. Ludovic is being frivolous, I fear, and...
Good evening, good evening.
Oh, Lord Dumbello.
Yes, that's right. Miss Grantley, may I have the next dance?
Yes, Lord Dumbello. Yes, you may. Excuse me.
Fine weather.
Cold?
Oh, yes, it's bitterly so.
You do not like Griselda, do you?
No, Mother, I'm sorry. You'd be glad if I did. You'd be glad if I'd married her.
Yes.
But I'm afraid, Mother, that you would not have made me happy.
Well, your happiness, Ludovic, is my only desire.
Thank you, Mother. You have been so good to me. I'd do anything to please you. Apart from marrying Miss Grantley. And to tell the truth, I'm not sure she'd have me if I asked. She's ambitious, is Miss Grantley. Has her sights set high.
My dear Ludovic, she could not have done better than by marrying you. You will get married someday, won't you?
Oh, yes, Mother. When I found the right girl.
Dr. Thorne.
Miss Dunstable.
Oh, you know I'd give anything for a glass of beer.
Ah.
But I suppose that's out of the question. Dr. Thorne, you are in precisely the same spot as when I left you an hour ago.
Am I?
Yes, indeed. On your own, too. And not looking at all comfortable.
Oh, I'm perfectly comfortable, thank you. Well, as much so as I expected to be.
You think I shouldn't have held this party, don't you? You think I've wasted my effort?
No, no, not at all. Some people will have derived pleasure from it.
But in your estimation, Doctor, it is all vanity and foolishness. Oh, dear. I think I meant to do good, though.
Of course you did. And you must not suppose that I am condemning you, Miss Dunstable.
Ah, but I do suppose it. You are condemning me, Dr. Thorne, and I condemn myself frequently. You know, since I have become rich, I have found that my better qualities, such as they are somehow wasted on the kind of people I tend to meet. Cleverness and scorn, irreverence and sarcasm, these all seem to serve me better. And my wealth, which I previously affected to despise, is corrupting me, debasing me. I fear, Dr. Thorne, that I'm fast losing my capacity for goodness.
Morning, Lufton. I heard you were back.
Yes, just for a few days, though. I'm off to Norway next week.
Norway?
Salmon fishing. The season's early this year, apparently. But I thought I'd spend a few days here first, see how the horses are.
The horses, I'm sure, are fine.
Yes, I'm sure they are. There is also another matter which has brought me to Framley. A very important matter, in fact.
Oh, yes. It's not money, I hope.
No, it's not money. Mark, has your sister spoken to you about me recently?
My sister? No. Well, nothing in particular, at least.
She's not told you, for instance, that I have made an offer of marriage to her.
What? Marriage to Lucy?
Yes.
No, of course not. She's told no one, I'm certain. And if people are claiming that Lucy has even hinted at such a thing, then I can assure you, Lufton, they're lying.
But, Mark, I did propose to Lucy.
I don't believe you.
I proposed to her. In as plain language as a gentleman could use.
And what was her answer?
She refused me. But I have come down to Framley to repeat my offer. Nothing, I admit, could have been more definite than your sister's answer. It struck me as being almost discourteously so. But it's possible that circumstances weighed with her that ought not to have weighed with her. Therefore, Mark, I mean to try my luck again.
Lady Lufton, I have some news to give you.
Yes, and I think I know what it might be. Your husband is to become a bishop.
Ah, well, that is not my news. Not at present, at least.
Oh, so what news are you giving me? Not bad news, I hope, Mrs. Grantley.
Well, I won't call it bad, though you may regard it as such. It is concerning Griselda. She ought, perhaps, to have spoken to you herself, but she was timid about doing so. Oh, Lady Lufton, it was my dearest wish to see her married to your son. You know that. The match would have satisfied my hopes for her entirely.
Yes, indeed. I'm sure it would. To tell the truth, though, it had become clear to me some time ago that your hopes and mine were not to be gratified. Well, whatever may now be your dear daughter's fortune in life, I sincerely hope that she will be happy.
Oh, I think she will be very happy. My news, Lady Lufton, is that Lord Dumbello proposed to Griselda the other night at Miss Dunstable's party.
Did he? And?
His lordship's offer was accepted.
Lucy, Lord Lufton is here.
Here? Now, at the parsonage?
No, Lucy, I mean he's at Framley Court.
But he's promised to call after breakfast tomorrow. Very well. If he wishes.
Lucy, my dear, he's coming especially to see you.
Oh, that makes a difference. I'm afraid in that case I shall be engaged.
Lucy, he has told me everything. And he requested to visit here tomorrow so that he might receive an answer from you.
What answer?
My dearest, that is for you to decide.
But what is it he wants? He came to me once before and I gave him an answer then.
And is that answer to be final?
Lord Lufton, at least, does not consider it to be so, and therefore he means to ask you a second time.
And Lady Lufton?
She knows nothing yet.
Lucy, dear, your own heart must make the choice.
Turn the matter over. After you have said your prayers tonight, ask yourself what answer you should give. And Lucy, you must know that I have perfect confidence in your judgment, and I will stand by you, as will Fanny, of course, in whatever decision you make.
Well, I have already made a decision. I do not wish Lord Lufton to come here tomorrow.
But Lucy...
It would do no good. It would only cause me pain. And he wouldn't wish that, I know. Mark, I do love Lord Lufton. I had no intention to, but I do love him. Almost as dearly, I suppose, as Fanny loves you. And you may tell him so. Indeed, you must tell him, or he will never understand me. And you must also tell him that I will never marry him. Not, that is, unless his mother asks me.
Unless she asks you? She will not do that, I fear.
No. If I thought that she would be happy for me to be her daughter-in-law, I would not have made such a stipulation. I think rather that she would regard me as quite unfit to be Lord Lufton's wife. She would hate me and despise me. And then he would begin to despise me too. And that I couldn't bear.
Unless my mother asks her. But that is nonsense. It's not the way of the world. You told Lucy as much, I hope.
The situation is she couldn't endure it if she thought Lady Lufton regarded her with disfavour. Even if your mother felt no personal animosity towards Lucy, she might not believe you were making the best of marriages.
I don't see why. But anyway, Mark, it's all absurd, this talk about my mother. A fellow these days doesn't marry as his mother bids him. Do you think Lucy loves me?
Well, I can't say whether she does or doesn't.
Why can't you say?
She won't accept you, Lufton. That is her message. She will only accept you if...
Yes. So, I am not to talk to her then. I am not to ask her myself if she will be my wife.
I'm sorry, Lufton. I truly am.
Mama says that you are not to be the Bishop of Westminster after all, Papa, and that we are not to move to London.
Your mother is correct, my dear.
But why, Papa? You were spending such a good deal of time with the new Prime Minister, were you not, Papa? It seems so certain.
Yes, Griselda, yes, it did. But you see, I could not be Bishop until the Act of Parliament was passed, and the Act of Parliament has not been passed.
Why has it not been passed, Papa?
Because the members of the previous ministry, although they themselves first put up the bill, have now decided they oppose it.
Oh.
Just as, indeed, the present ministry opposed it before, I mean, they became the present ministry.
Oh. That is all very strange, Papa.
Very strange. And very distressing. Parliament has become a laughingstock, and the work of the church has been impeded. Shameful. Shameful!
Well, Mark, I won't beat about the bush. I'm here concerning those bills.
I suspected as much.
I've had a word with Tozer. The money dealer, you know?
Yes, Sowerby, I do know.
He intends to demand the full £900. Straight away.
What?
I fear so. I thought it best to tell you, Mark, in order that we can see what can be done.
Well, Sowerby, I can do nothing. So Tozer, for his part, must take what action he deems fit.
But, Mark, my dear fellow...
Mr. Sowerby, I have been a fool.
and worse than a fool. I did think, I admit, that your standing in the world would give me a little protection.
Well, Mark, so did I.
But I find instead that you have robbed me, cheated me, plotted my ruin without a thought for my wife or children.
Mark, you must calm yourself. We need to find a solution to this difficulty. Attempt to reach some kind of settlement.
No, Mr. Sowerby. I, at least, shall make no such attempt.
Then you will be ruined. The bailiffs will be at your door. Your reputation will be irreparably damaged.
Well, so be it.
Mark, listen.
Call me by my surname, if you please. Let us have no affectation of friendship.
It is no affectation, I assure you. You are not yet ruined. I am. I have lost my fortune. I am about to lose my estate. If Parliament is dissolved, as seems inevitable, I shall in all likelihood lose my seat in the House. But none of this, believe me, oppresses me as much as the misery I have brought upon you. I wish to help you, save you. That's why I asked that we might talk today.
Yes? And how am I to be saved? By my accepting another brace of bills, I suppose?
Just one bill, signed conjointly with me.
Mr. Sowerby, no power on earth will persuade me to sign another bill. I was very weak before, but I have sufficient strength left to refuse your offer.
Well, if you won't sign a bill, you could obtain a loan from your bank.
I could, perhaps, but I won't try. I obtained a loan only recently, you know. Borrowed £130 in order to buy that horse of yours. And very weak and foolish I was in that matter, too. You told me, Mr. Sowerby, that the price would be deducted from the total amount of those two bills. I wouldn't have to pay a penny in cash. That's what you said. Do you not remember?
Yes, Robarts, I remember. And I swear that at the time, I did not intend to ask you for the money for the horse.
Did you not?
No. In truth. But I suddenly found that I was in need of it. Your friend, Lord Lufton, got into a rage about a bill that was outstanding. For £800 it was. And I thought that if I didn't pay that bill myself, he'd make a noise about things, your bills included. Which would have proved very harmful to you, I think. Would have spoilt your chances of becoming prebendary at Barchester.
Yes, no doubt. Well, it's clear to me now that if I'd had any self-esteem, I would never have assumed that particular office. I would have rejected your generous gift.
My dear fellow,
if I'd had any self-esteem, if indeed I'd had good sense, I would have severed all connections with you long ago. The cost of my acquaintance with you is very dear, is it not? When I am to lose everything I have. I must tell her. I cannot, must not, let the story stay untold until a bailiff arrives at the door and our furniture is sold from under us or I am led off to the county jail. I must tell Fanny everything. Must do so today. Now. If I wait another hour, I think my courage will fail me.
You frighten me, Mark. Why do you look so grave, so anxious?
My dearest, I have been very foolish. I have committed a terrible wrong and have brought great sorrow and misfortune upon us.
Oh, Mark, no. Don't turn away from me. Tell me, Mark. Tell me what this misfortune is that we may share it.
I will tell you. But I don't imagine what you will think of me when I do.
I will think that you are my own husband. My own dear husband. That's what I will think. Whatever it is, you may tell me, and if indeed you have acted wrongly...
Oh, yes, indeed I have.
Then it is my duty and my privilege to forgive you.
Dearest Ludovic, Miss Robarts is not fit to be your wife.
Not fit? She is of the same class as Griselda Grantly.
No, no. You are quite mistaken.
The one is a clergyman's sister, the other a clergyman's daughter.
But, my dearest, the Grantlys move in an entirely different sphere of life, as you are perfectly aware.
Well, whatever sphere Miss Robarts moves in, I wish her to be my wife. And I want to ask, as a favour, that you will take to her, like her, If you do not do so already, that is.
Oh, Ludovic. Ludovic.
Mother, my mind is made up. I intend to marry her.
I think you will be throwing yourself away if you do.
Yes, Mother. But the reason you think so is because you do not know Miss Robarts well enough. Mother, when I return from Norway, I shall come straight home and I shall see which way the land lies. You are going down to Framley today, are you?
I leave this morning.
Well, when you are there, Mother, I would ask that you treat Lucy as if I were engaged to her.
But Ludovic...
Though I am not engaged quite yet, I have made my offer to her, and it has not been rejected. So, please, be kind to her. Be good to her. For I intend to make her my wife.
£900. That is a large sum.
And then there is the 130 which I borrowed to pay for the horse, and the interest on that, and other smaller debts. The whole amount will not be far short of £1,300. £1,300. And what have I won in return?
Mark. Dearest Mark. I'm so glad you told me.
I should have told you sooner.
Perhaps. But you have told me now, and now I hope I'll be able to ease your worries by sharing them.
Oh, Fanny, I'll never put my name to another bill, believe me. Never. For no one.
Thank you, my dearest. Why, Lucy, you've heard, have you?
Heard what?
About Mrs. Crawley. She has typhus. Typhus? Oh, no, Mark. I shall go over and see her at once.
Well, that you won't. If it is typhus, we should not want the children to run any risk of contagion when you return.
Indeed not. Which rules you out also, dear brother. And anyway, men are almost worse than useless on such occasions.
Oh.
So I shall go. And when I return, I'll keep well clear of the bairns, I promise. Now, do I have leave to take some provisions?
She's very ill.
Yes, I was told as much, which is why I'm here.
God has stricken us heavily, Miss Robarts. Very heavily. But I've prayed to him. Was on my knees for the best part of last night. That is my only hope, that he hears my prayers and answers them. God's will be done.
Yes, and it may be his will, Mr. Crawley, that I should give some assistance myself.
What kind of assistance?
Well, one thing, I think, would be to arrange for the children to be moved from here.
Moved?
Yes. Until your wife is feeling well enough to look after them again.
But where would they go?
I'm not sure yet. To the parsonage at Framley, perhaps. Though I would need to talk it over with Mrs. Robarts first. And, of course, another thing I must do is spend some time with your wife.
You can't do that, Miss Robarts. Not while she has the fever.
It's because she has the fever, Mr. Crawley, that I want to see her. Just for a short while on this visit. But when I return, this evening most likely, I shall be coming to stay.
Stay? For how long?
Until Mrs. Crawley is better, of course.
But Lucy, I'm not at all sure that you should stay there.
Oh, yes, I must. I promised I would. And there is no one else to look after her. Apart from her husband, I mean. And there's not much he can do except pray to God.
Well, before anything else, my dear, I have a letter that's been brought for you from Lady Lufton.
From Lady Lufton?
Yes. The servant asked for an immediate reply, but I explained that you'd be gone for a few hours. Won't you open it?
Yes, of course. It is not a very long letter, so it cannot be a catalogue of my vices. She wants to see me. I am to step over to Framley Court, she says, as soon as it's convenient. Oh, dear. I'm in for it now. Oh, well. Wish me luck.
I think I understand from what my son has told me that there is no actual engagement between you and him.
None whatsoever, Lady Lufton.
And may I assume that there is nothing going on between you? That it is now all over?
Well, Lady Lufton, that depends entirely on you.
On me?
Yes.
May I ask what your son has told you about this matter?
He has told me that he made you an offer of marriage. Something which, as his mother, I regard very seriously. And so I thought I had better see you and appeal to your good sense and judgment, and to your high feeling. You are aware, of course, that a man of Lord Lufton's rank and position in the world...
Lady Lufton, forgive me. Did your son tell you what my answer was to the offer that he made?
You refused him. And I must express to you, Miss Robarts, my admiration and my gratitude.
Lady Lufton, forgive me again. I did refuse him. And I believe now that I should not have done so. In part, I think I refused him because I feared your displeasure. But I do love him. I loved him from the first, though I did not mean to do so. Was foolish enough to think that I could know him and not love him.
Miss Robarts, I could see what was happening, I assure you.
Oh, everybody could.
And I took what I thought were the appropriate steps.
Yes, Lady Lufton, you did. It was already too late, though. I loved him then and love him now. Dearly and with all my heart.
Shall I get the baby ready then, Miss Robarts?
Yes, please, Grace. And tell your brother what the plan is, if you would, so that he can be ready too.
Yes, Miss Robarts.
Good evening.
Good evening to you both.
Miss Robarts, I have not said you can take the children away, you know.
Oh, I shall not take them away. Mark will do that. For I am staying, as I told you, Mr. Crawley. It is all arranged. Indeed it is.
Perhaps it is arranged, Miss Robarts, but it was never agreed. I should have been consulted before a proceeding such as this.
I think it might be for the best, Crawley.
The two will be quite comfortable at family parties.
I do not doubt that at all. But too much of such comforts will unfit them when they come back home.
Mr. Crawley, allow us to give you some small assistance.
I look to assistance from God, Mr. Robarts, not from man.
But for your wife's sake.
For the children's sake. Please. Nathaniel, where are you?
I'm here, sister.
Oh, good Lord. What are you doing?
Sitting. Looking out of the garden. Thinking. The lawns need trimming. Look, the flowers are fading. There are weeds pushing up through the gravel path. And see there, one of the dryads has fallen from her pedestal. All in decline and decay. But while it was still mine, Harriet, there was still hope that I could rescue the place, preserve it. Pass Chaldecotts on to the next generation, as it has been passed on from father to son for centuries past. And who is it to go to now? To the Duke of Omnium. Omnium! The Sowerbys lived here before that name was ever heard in England.
Come, Matt. Oh, it's very cold.
No money, no home. Soon, no seat in Parliament. Some young patrician will get that, I suppose. Some creature of the Duke's. Of course, I've always lived with debts and difficulties for as long as I can recall. But I always taught myself that I could endure them. Now, though, it's all gone too far. The game's up, Harriet.
No, the game is not up. Listen, what if someone were to pay all that you owe the Duke? If someone were to advance the money on the security of Chaldecotts, just as the Duke did?
I don't think there's much chance of that. Who am I going to find with that kind of money?
Well...
And why would he want to use it in such a way?
She. Not he. I'm thinking of Miss Dunstable. Well then, Grace, if you will carry the clothes,
yes,
I shall carry the baby.
Yes, Miss Robarts.
Ah, Bob, where is your father, Bob?
He's still talking with Mother.
Good. Then let us go, and swiftly.
Lucy, wait a moment.
Up you jump, Bobby.
Yes, Miss Robarts.
And you, Grace.
Mr. Crawley has still not given his permission.
He has not absolutely refused it.
He has done as much as, surely.
Now then, look here.
I think we're too late.
No, Mark, you must go. No.
This isn't right, you know.
Lucy.
Please, you must.
Very well.
Come on, Robert.
Goodbye, children. Be good.
Stop.
Goodbye.
Stop. Stop.
Another cup of tea, Uncle.
Thank you.
Uncle?
Yes, Mary?
You remember that conversation we had the last time you came to Boxall Hill?
Well, no doubt we did converse. We often do when you invite me to tea.
Yes, Uncle. And on this occasion we conversed particularly about Miss Dunstable and about marriage.
Ah, yes. I do remember that.
Have you thought about it at all since then?
Thought about it? Oh, indeed. An idea such as that, Mary, once it has been put into a man's head, is almost bound, I think, to be thought about.
I believe you would have a good chance of success if you were to ask her.
Oh, Mary.
I do, truly.
Yes, no doubt. You do, my dear, but you should not be trying to tempt an old man into an act of folly. It is wrong of you. It is.
I don't see that at all. Why should it be wrong of me to want to make you happy?
But I am happy already.
Well, then, why should not you and Miss Dunstable both be happy? Together.
Oh.
Mrs. Crawley is making good progress, I hear.
Yes.
And Miss Robarts is still with her, is she?
She is, and Mrs. Crawley's children are with us.
Did Mr. Crawley not make any difficulties about the children?
I gather he did. But on Lucy's instructions, Mark kidnapped them.
Dear me. When that Miss Lucy of yours takes a thing into her head, she doesn't like to give it up, does she?
No, she is a very determined young lady. But determined as she is also self-denying. I mean, in particular, with regard to the matter between herself and your son. She is not to blame in any of that.
I have never said that she is.
She should be praised, not blamed. For she saw how it would bring dissension between you and your son if she accepted his offer, and so she sacrificed herself. And for that, Lady Lufton, you owe her a deep debt of gratitude.
Oh, my dear Fanny, you're a second Don Quixote, I do declare, dashing him with lance and shield when there's no enemy in sight. The simple truth is, there has been imprudence, as you are well aware.
Imprudence? Lady Lufton, she did not seek him out. They met. They fell in love. These things happen.
But it is not necessary for every young gentleman and every young lady to fall in love directly they meet. It would be very inconvenient if they did.
Of course it would, but such is not the case. Lord Lufton and Miss Grantley, for example, did not fall in love, though you meant them to do so. Your son did, however, fall in love with Lucy. And he told her of his love. He begged her to accept his hand. And she refused the offer, though she loved him deeply. Refused him not as some girls do, with mock reserve and with no intention of being taken at their word, but firmly, steadily, and by denying her love for him. What more could she have done on your behalf? When he tried to make his offer a second time, she refused to see him, sent him a message instead that she would never accept him unless she did so at your request.
It was a very proper message.
Well, perhaps. Though I tell you, Lady Lufton, I would not have blamed her if she had accepted him.
I see. So you regret her decision?
I regret anything that may stand in the way of her happiness.
And you have no regard, therefore, for my own happiness.
Lady Lufton.
In the past, you know, I could always count on you for love and sympathy. But now, when this great weight is upon me, when your sister-in-law obliges me to make a decision, I find that you are no longer my friend.
But if you would only give your approval.
No, Fanny. Please understand, I cannot approve of her marrying Ludovic. I simply cannot do it.
Greshamsbury, June the 18th. My dear Miss Dunstable, I think it right to confess that a fear of being considered false and mercenary would, in other circumstances, have kept me from writing this letter to you. But, a third party has led me to believe that the proposition I am about to make would be regarded by you with favour. And so, Miss Dunstable, I have felt sufficiently emboldened to give it a try. We have not known each other long, but we do, I fancy, know each other quite well. And I have gained the impression that you are almost as pleased to be with me as I am to be with you. And, therefore, if you can suppose that a union between us might increase the happiness on each side, then I will be bold enough to plight you my troth. Well, when I remind myself of my age, I cannot help thinking that I'm an old fool. But I try to reconcile myself to that by remembering that you yourself are no longer a girl. Your affectionate friend, Thomas Thorne.
Mary Gresham, you are a traitor. A traitor, I tell you.
Why, whatever is the matter?
This. It is from your uncle. Read. But the first four lines only.
Oh.
No. It is not a love letter, as you suppose.
I think it right to confess.
It is not a love letter at all. He tells me I'm an old woman and insinuates that I'm an old fool, too.
Miss Dunstable, I'm sure he doesn't do either. But a third party has led me to believe...
Yes! And who was that third party?
Well, it was me, of course.
Aha! You confess it.
We have not known each other long.
No, that is enough. And what did you tell him, Mrs. Gresham? What did you advise him? Now, come on out with it.
I told him you would have him if he offered.
You told him that? As a fact?
I told him it was what I thought.
Well. Then I suppose I am bound to have him.
The likelihood is, my dear, that the bailiffs will come tomorrow.
Tomorrow? What will you do?
Nothing. What can I do? They must come. I'm so very sorry.
Lord Lufton is due back today. Why don't you talk to him?
What? Ask him for money? No, I'll not do that. I want no dealings with Lufton.
Why? Because of Lucy?
Well, it might be awkward, might it not? But also, Fanny, he had his difficulties with Sabi too, you know, and he thinks I was the cause of them. There would be sharp things between us on that account, if no other. One thing I must do is resign as prebendary of Barchester.
Oh, but why? Will not people think it very odd? And
people will think much worse of my conduct than that.
But you have done nothing that is unjust or dishonourable.
At the very least, Fanny, I have touched pitch and become defiled. I will resign. The gift was Sabi's, and I should never have accepted it. Oh, how that man has made me suffer. I can only hope and pray that he may suffer for it in return, in the next world, if not in this.
Dearest, no. No, do not wish him evil. You must not. He has his own sorrows. You can be sure of that. You see, Nathaniel, I have something to tell you which is worth celebrating.
Your very good health.
Thank you. Well?
Well, Nat, Miss Dunstable has pondered over our suggestion.
Your suggestion.
And she has finally agreed to it.
How does she know?
She's got all the details worked out. And the upshot is that Chaldicott will become hers, just as it was previously the Duke's. But that you will continue to live there. And if the place is well managed, as this Dunstable will no doubt ensure that it is, there is no reason why Chaldicotts cannot remain your home for the rest of your life.
I must, I think, go along with this plan.
You must indeed. But there's more to it yet. She wants to help you in the election. Financially, I mean. It's not pure altruism on her part.
Harriet, I didn't suppose it could be.
She's keen to set herself up in opposition to the Duke, as both a landowner and a political patron.
I understand. So, Nathaniel Sowerby has escaped from the Duke's captivity into Miss Dunstable's.
Oh, Nat.
I am grateful to her. In truth, I am. After the disaster of my offer of marriage...
My offer of marriage?
I don't think I could have expected very much from Miss Dunstable. I'm grateful to you, too, of course. But I fear Miss Dunstable's assistance can't rescue me now. Too late for that. I tell you, Harriet, my spirit's well nigh broken. Life, for me, is turning very sad.
But that is appalling, Mother. A scandal.
I understand it was of her own doing, Ludovic.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But there is no need, surely, for her to be sacrificed in this manner. Are there no nurses that can be hired? Mother, she is not ill, is she? She has not caught the fever herself.
I have no idea.
Oh, I insist upon knowing. I shall go to Hogglestock first thing tomorrow.
Very well.
And when I see Lucy, what am I to say to her? Assuming, that is, that she's not been taken ill. What am I to say to her as coming from you?
Ludovic, I have explained it all to Miss Robarts and to her sister-in-law.
Explained what?
I have told them that I do not think that marriage would bring happiness either to you or to Miss Robarts.
But why have you said this? Why do you think you have the right to decide for me in such a matter? Mother, you must unsay what you have said. You must! What objection do you have to her? What impediment is there? Is it that she has no money?
No, Ludovic. That is not the reason.
Then what is it? Tell me!
Well, if I were forced to put my objection into a single word, I should say that she was...
Yes?
Oh, Ludovic. All I want is for you to be happy.
What is that single word, Mother?
She is... insignificant. She is a very good girl, Ludovic.
Insignificant?
But she is not qualified to fill the high position to which you would exalt her.
She is not insignificant. She is not.
Ludovic, I think perhaps you do not quite understand me.
I know what insignificant means. And I know what you mean, too. You'd have me marry some terrifying Amazon. Some pink and white giantess of fashion who likes to frighten lesser folk into their proprieties. Oh. Mother... There is no son in England who is more devoted or dutiful than I, but there are some things which a dutiful son cannot endure. I have chosen Lucy, and no one has the right to stand between us. Oh, Mother, I confess it would pain me if you did not love her, but whether you can love her or not, please, Mother, go to her. Go and hold out your hand to her, and ask her to be my wife.
I was so very proud, as much so, in my own way, as Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock. I had assumed a standing, held my head high, spent time among great people. But where is my pride now? And what will the Arabins and the Grantleys and the Proudies say when they learn that the bailiffs have visited Framley Parsonage? What will Josiah Crawley say? He is a man who is half-starved, whose children are dressed in rags, whose wife, when she is not ill, is nothing but a drudge. But has he ever had the bailiffs visit him?
Mark, the men are here. They're in the dining room.
Yes, I know.
Perhaps you should go and see them, my dear.
What is the use? I shall see them soon enough.
Cook says they're very civil for their line of life and will stay so, she thinks, if they're given some meat for their midday meal and a glass of beer.
Oh, let them eat while the food lasts. I don't suppose the butcher will be sending us any more.
Mark, we owe the butcher nothing.
Not at present, perhaps, but you'll see.
My dearest,
You mustn't speak that way. No, Mark, don't turn from me. Who is to comfort us if we cannot comfort each other?
Comfort? How can you think of giving me comfort? I am amazed that you can endure to be in the same room as me. Look around you, Fanny. Look at these things of ours. Things we bought when money was plentiful, or which were given to us by Lady Lufton. Things which are dear to us. And now they are to be scrutinized and catalogued and given a price.
Oh, dearest.
And in short time, they will be taken away.
Come in.
Morning.
Lufton.
I'm sorry to arrive unannounced, but the house is in a state of some confusion.
Yes.
How do you do, Mrs. Robarts? This is all a terrible bore, isn't it? Our gardener gave me the news and I came straight over.
It's not Mark's fault, Lord Lufton.
I'm sure it's not.
Mr. Sowerby has betrayed him.
Believe me, Mrs. Robarts, Mr. Sowerby has betrayed everyone who has ever trusted him. I told you as much a while ago, Mark, did I not?
Yes, Lufton, you did.
But why on earth have you let it go so far? There's no need for the bailiffs, is there?
Mark wouldn't sign any more bills. He was quite determined.
And you were quite right too, Mark. But you could have come to me, surely. Or my mother. Oh, anyway. We'll talk later. Those men I saw on my way in with the big boots and the pens and inkhorns. I must have a word with them before they do any damage.
Archdeacon.
Yes, Susan.
I have just come from speaking with my sister.
Ah, how is Eleanor?
She says she has received a visit from Mrs. Proudie.
Well, many of us must be visited by Mrs. Proudie sometime in our lives.
She says that Mrs. Proudie is spreading a rumour.
Nothing new in that. What is the rumour, my dear?
It concerns Griselda, Archdeacon, and Lord Dumbello.
What?
The rumour has it, Archdeacon, that he has jilted her.
Jilted her? Good heavens!
It is not a rumour, Dr. Grantly. Lord Dumbello has fled the country. He started 4 days ago by way of Boulogne and is now in hiding somewhere on the continent.
Never mind where he has gone to. The story is that he has broken off his engagement to my daughter, and I am asking that this should be denied.
Well, then, you will have to go round to every house in Barchester, for the story, as you put it, has been widely told.
Yes, and at whose instigation, I wonder? My lord.
Dr. Grant.
The bishop is entirely ignorant of the affair.
Oh, that is quite correct. Entirely ignorant.
You are one of the few, then? How strange, when your own wife has been such an energetic messenger. Dr. Proudie, I must tell you that your wife distinctly mentioned the matter to my sister-in-law, Mrs. Arabin.
But of course. Why should I not distinctly mention it? There are some things which can't be kept under a bushel, Dr. Grantly, and this appears to be one of them.
There are no grounds for the rumour, no grounds at all, and therefore, my lord...
The bishop, as I said, has no knowledge of any of this.
But I do very much hope that it will all be resolved satisfactorily.
Dr. Grantly, I understand your feelings. Considering your daughter's position, the match was a very good one, as regards earthly wealth, I mean. And I therefore do not wonder that you should be grieved at its being broken off.
Mrs. Proudie.
But worldly disappointments can become precious balms, as you perhaps have discovered, Archdeacon, during your career. And I'm sure you will learn how to live with this sorrow.
Now, Mr. Robarts, Ludovic has urged me, for he has a kind heart, a very kind heart, not to be too severe with you. So, all I will say on the matter is this. I hope you and Ludovic have had enough to do with black sheep to last you your respective lifetimes.
I have been very foolish, Lady Lufton. Very foolish. And very wicked.
Very foolish, yes. As has Ludovic. And since it was he, so he tells me, who first introduced you to Mr. Sowerby, and thereby helped to get you into your troubles, I am pleased to hear that he is getting you out of them.
he has been extremely kind, and I told him so 100 times. To be free of the bailiffs is a great relief. But it's understood between your son and me that I intend to hand him back every penny he pays on my behalf.
I'm sure you do. And now I think we should say no more about this wretched business, either now or at any time. Let it never be mentioned again.
God bless you, Lady Lufton. Fanny and I could never have such a friend as you are.
Thank you. And you know, Mr. Robarts, I would like to be a friend to your sister, too.
I'm sure I shall be able to get about tomorrow, Lucy, dear. And then I need not keep you from your home.
Mrs. Crawley, you are in a great hurry to get rid of me. I suppose your husband has been complaining again about the cream in his teeth.
You don't know how he speaks of you when your back is turned.
Well, when my back wasn't turned, he told me I was a weaver of falsehood. That was with regard to the arrival of the mutton broth, I believe.
And he told me that if you were to write an epic poem about womanhood, he would make you the heroine.
Ah, yes, with a cream jug in my hand.
He says you are an angel, Lucy. And so you have been, a ministering angel and a friend. I'm almost glad that I have been ill, seeing that I have made such a friend on account of it. Now, who's this?
It must be Fanny, with some more mutton broth.
No, my dear, that's not the pony cart. I'd recognise the sound of that by now.
Well, let us see. Oh, good heavens! It's Lady Lufton's carriage.
Oh.
And Lady Lufton is inside it.
Miss Robarts, do take a seat.
Thank you.
My dear, you will, I think, recall our last conversation.
I do recall it, Lady Lufton.
Well, my dear, what I said to you then, I said because I thought it was for the best. You, of all people, will not be angry with me for loving my own son better than I love anyone else.
Oh, no. No, indeed.
He is the best of sons. The very best. And I am certain that he will be the best of husbands, too. It was my fond hope once to choose a bride for him. But he has made his own choice. He has chosen someone whose qualities, I confess, I was, in my foolishness, not quick to recognize. But who I now see possesses a strong spirit, a quickness of mind, and a wonderful capacity for selflessness. For these qualities, and many others, my son loves her, and is right to do so. Which is why I am here, Lucy. I have come to ask you to be his wife. Lucy, my dear, must I go back to him and tell him that there is some objection, some hindrance, other than that stern old mother who thought her only son too precious to be parted with?
No. There is no hindrance.
What shall I tell him, then? Shall I say simply, yes?
Yes, Lady Lufton. Dear Lady Lufton. Simply, yes. How strange it was the following day when I left the parsonage at Hogglestock and was driven to Framley Court and led into the drawing room there. How strange to think that not so many months before, I had sat in the corner of that room, sore at heart, because I felt I was no fit companion to those around me.
But things have come to a different pass now. Lady Lufton, of whom Lucy was so much in awe, loves her and cares for her beyond measure. Her son has chosen Lucy, and Lucy is the apple of his eye.
They were married in October, and a splendid affair it was. But before then, there were two other marriages of note. First, that of Lord Dumbello to Miss Griselda Grantley. Rumour has it
that there was a marked degree of uncertainty about his marriage prior to the appointed day. But rumour also has it that such uncertainty was thoroughly extinguished after Archdeacon Grantly met with his lordship on foreign soil and had a very serious and useful word with him. As for the second marriage, that was between Dr. Thomas Thorne of Greshamsbury and Miss Martha Dunstable.
Do you remember, at my conversazione, I told you I was losing my capacity for goodness?
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Well, I have every hope of getting it back.
Have you? Oh, I'm very pleased. May I ask by what means?
By being married, of course. To you.
Oh, I see.
You're going to make a decent woman of me. And not before time.
By the way, despite Miss Dunstable's best efforts, I should say Mrs. Thorne's best efforts, Nathaniel Sowerby lost the seat for West Barsetshire. To Lord Dumbello, in fact. And that, I think, has quite knocked the stuffing out of Mr. Sowerby. He still lives at Chaldecotts, of course. But there is no Chaldecotts set to gather in that ancient house. No clever talk or mocking laughter. Those days are gone for him and for me. And I, at least, do not regret their passing.
That was the final episode of Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope, dramatised for radio by Martin Wade. Mark Robarts was played by David Haig, Lady Lufton by Anna Massey, Fanny by Olivia Williams, Lucy by Abigail Doherty, Dr. Thorne by John Wood, and Miss Dunstable by Selina Cadell. Josiah Crawley was played by Kenneth Cranham, Mrs. Crawley by Gabrielle Lloyd, Mary by Amanda Root, Sowerby by John Carlyle, Lord Lufton by Christopher Scott, Mrs. Proudie by Rosemary Leach, Dr. Proudie by David Horovitch, Dr. Grantly by Stephen Moore, Mrs. Grantly by Jilly Bond, Griselda by Alice Arnold, Mrs. Smith by Shirley Dixon, and Lord Dumbello by Ewan Meredith. The production assistant was Leslie Allen. Framley Parsonage was directed by Cherry Cookson.